Hello, welcome back to Cannabis Insider. You know, you are in the greenest corner of the podcast world. As you know, I'm Pat O'Little, but today I'm thrilled to introduce a new co-host here, Nico Rodriguez from Benzinga's Cannabis team. Nico is a very knowledgeable person in everything that comes to cannabis, and he writes really awesome articles for us. So, Nico, very happy to have you here. How are you today?
Thank you, Pato. Very excited today. You know, we have an incredible guest, Anthony Coniglio, CEO of New Lake Capital Partners, fresh off announcing their Q1 2024 financial results. And, you know, the company's in the business of providing real estate capital to cannabis companies. So looking forward to hear more from him.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's an exciting time for the cannabis industry now. And we'll talk about Anthony about all these updates and developments. So let's get started. Hello, Anthony. Welcome back to Cannabis Insider. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Great to see you guys. Thanks for having me back.
All right. Yeah, it's always great to have you here. We always love to hear insights about the industry. So to start off, maybe for those who may be the first time that they hear about New Lake Capital, can you tell us a little bit about your company and its role in the cannabis industry?
Sure. Thank you again for having me. New Lake Capital Partners, we're a publicly traded real estate investment trust, or REIT, focused exclusively on the cannabis space. We were started back in 2019, and today we own 32 properties across 12 states with 13 separate tenants. What we do is we acquire properties from and for cannabis operators for cultivation facilities as well as retail properties in order to provide capital for real estate that is better served with our investor base as opposed to cannabis operators utilizing their precious capital to tie it up in commercial real estate. And our tenants, we have some of the leading companies in the world, names like a Curaleaf or a Trulieve or a Cresco, some of the public names I'd mentioned, but also some high quality private names like a C3 Industries. We recently announced a deal with them, as well as Mint Cannabis. So that's a little bit about New Lake.
Awesome. And it's a crucial role, the one you have in the cannabis industry now. And we were just going through your earnings report, your recent financial results announcement. And well, you reported a 10.4 year-over-year increase on your Q1 revenue. So that's a really good number, yeah, reaching 12.6 million. So we wanted to ask you, what were the key factors that contributed to this growth? And also, how do you plan to sustain it?
Yeah, so the success of our most recent quarter, you know, given we make investments that have long duration assets, long durations to them. So again, think about we acquire a property, we lease it out to an operator, and that lease can be 15 to 20 years. And so the remaining weighted average lease term in our portfolio is 14 years. The reason I go into that is because the performance today really has to do with the way we underwrote and the investments we made in previous periods. And so that hard work that our team does in underwriting quality transactions with quality operators and quality properties resulted in strong cash flows for the quarter. And that growth is a function of increasing our tenant improvement dollars that have been, that have been distributed over the last year. We have commitments where there's properties. We've entered into agreements to construct properties. So as those properties are completed, we're delivering the dollars in and then charging rent on those dollars. And so a big part of it was that growth that occurred over the last year. In terms of how we're going to sustain it, we get growth at New Lake from three sectors, from three components. First component is we get it from our annual rent escalators. And so the way a typical lease works is every year you have a step up in the rent payment, usually to reflect the inflation environment. For us across the portfolio, we are running around 2.6% annual rent escalation. So that first component, every year, collect rent and your revenue goes up 2.6%. Number two is those commitments I was just talking about. And so at the end of the first quarter, we had roughly $15 million of commitments that were out on various projects. And so as that money is distributed, we will be charging incremental rent. So we'll grow revenue from the commitments that we have on our books. And then third is growth. We have a $90 million credit facility with only $4 million outstanding. We only have $4 million of total debt on over $430 million of assets. And so that available $86 million, some of that will be used to fund the commitments. But beyond that, we have additional space for new transactions to execute on. And that's where we'll get some additional growth from.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anthony. That was great. Very descriptive. Amazing how you help these companies grow without the burden of property ownership. And that's what definitely we're going to need in the future to escalate this business. I was also going through your earnings report and I saw that you concentrate. I don't know if that is a matter of chance or why. I'm interested in the rationale behind it. You're concentrated on Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. You have 47% of your portfolio there. I was wondering why.
Yeah, so a core part of our underwriting approach is to focus on limited license jurisdictions. These are jurisdictions where the state may typically regulate alcohol very tightly, and they're taking a similar approach to cannabis. Why do we like those states? We think they create better cash flows at the properties that we own, and they provide a bigger moat around the business for the tenants that we have. So let me explain that. In a limited license jurisdiction, where you have fewer licenses, that means fewer competitors, which typically means slightly better margins. If you have better margins, that business and that property can generate better cash flow. And that's a key component to our understanding. But also beyond the cash flow, to the extent that somebody just can't make it, because not every businesses are successful. And again, we have a very long time horizon for our leases with an over 14-year remaining average weighted average lease term. You end up finding that there's demand for those licenses. So if it was really easy to get a license, somebody that failed at our property, somebody's going to say, I don't really care. Why would I need that property? I'll just go somewhere else. When these states with very tight real estate regulations, as well as tight regulatory action around the licenses, that license has intrinsic value. And so what you'll see is for companies that do ultimately struggle, they can monetize that license and recover some asset value for their shareholder base. And so that's an added layer of protection. And so that's a key reason why we focus on limited license states. When you look at Pennsylvania or Florida or Ohio, you do see that construct.
Okay. I see that there's regulatory and geographic lens for you to organize your investments. I was wondering on the softer side, or let's say the business aspect of it, when you evaluate these firms, the people you lend money to, or the companies, these 86 millions that you have in your revolving credit facility, what are the things that you look at? I mean, you're getting 100% of repayments. I mean, that has to be some serious scanning of who you have in front. I was wondering how's that process go?
Yeah, so we did have 100% of rent collected in the quarter. 100% of our properties are leased, and all of our capital is earning money for our shareholders. And so that's what you were alluding to. And so getting back to that underwriting process, a key component of it, and it is up on our website for those that are interested, newlatecapital.com. Go to the investor page. You can see our investor presentation where we talk a little bit in there about our underwriting process. And so one of those key components is understanding. We talk about the licensing and the jurisdiction, which we've covered. We talk about the property and property level cash flows. We do a lot of analysis and assumptions around how will those markets evolve? What will pricing evolve in the market? How will our particular tenant be able to grow revenue? How will we see that revenue taper off over time as the market normalizes over the next 10 years or so? And what's the ultimate level of cash flow that that property could generate? Because if it generates meaningful cash flow and it's mission critical, people will more likely pay the rent. Getting to your question though, that third pillar of our underwriting is the quality of the companies. And you know, here it's taking the collective wisdom of our team. We have decades and decades and decades of experience raising capital, not just for ourselves, but for other clients in previous lives. And so we look at the team's ability to manage a high growth business in a highly regulated industry. It really is a unique skill set. Not everybody can do it. A lot of people can raise that first round of capital from friends and family, can get that business off the ground from an entrepreneurial perspective. But to really operationalize and scale a highly regulated business in a high growth environment is an acquired capability. And so we really dig into the backgrounds and the capabilities of the team. We also look at the team's ability to raise capital. One thing we know for sure, and I think we could all agree on, is these businesses tend to have voracious appetites for capital. And so the ability to raise that second, third round of capital from organizations that you typically bring in, more institutionally oriented organizations, is an important component of evaluation. And we don't get it always right. I don't want to suggest that we bat 100%. Of course, we're going to make some mistakes. Anytime you're deploying capital and you are doing it for 15 to 20 years, you're bound to have some issues. But by using this three-pillar approach, we think we've minimized the issues in the portfolio. And you know that's why when you look at the last couple of quarters, 100% of the properties are rented and 100% rent was collected.
Super insightful answer. And yeah, I think that really clarifies the way you engage new clients. I wanted to jump to another subject now, because we also saw that you recently made Nulek recently made a $16 million investment in Connecticut with C3 Industries, which, if I'm not wrong, it marks your second transaction with them. So,
correct.
Can you discuss a little bit about the strategic importance of these partnerships for Nulek?
Yeah, let's absolutely talk about that and put it in the context of those three pillars we just discussed. So jurisdiction, we think about Connecticut, it's actually an extremely complicated regulatory structure, but we very much view Connecticut as limited license, and there are very few licenses out there today. And in fact, there are very few people that are pursuing cultivation activities in the state. Many of those new licenses, which come with a combination of cultivation and retail, the folks with those licenses, many of them are focusing on the retail aspects of the business. And so we thought, along with C3, that wholesale was very underserved for the state. And so they will have wholesale components of the business, but they'll also have their own retail. They'll be vertically integrated in the state. So Connecticut, limited license state, very attractive for us. From a property perspective, this was a former cold storage facility. It's in an industrial area. We think about what the alternative use for the property could be. We also looked at what the market could generate in terms of sales for them, both in the wholesale and through their own stores. Oh. We got very, very comfortable with underwriting that facility's ability to generate meaningful net cash flow in order to make sure that there was enough cash flow for rent and other expenses, you know, for the foreseeable future and through the life of the lease. And then third is that underwriting of the management team. We've did a transaction a couple of years ago with the C3 team in Missouri. They've been one of the leaders in Missouri. They've done a terrific job. They built out a facility that we funded, and then we gave them additional money to build another 100,000 square feet to that facility so they could lean into adult use. That's just about coming to completion, really any week now. And they've been a terrific management team that's been able to be successful in Missouri. They're successful in Massachusetts, and they're also successful in Michigan. Some states, very, very difficult to operate in. So that proven operational expertise in other states, our personal experience having worked with them on the Missouri project, coupled with Connecticut being a great state to invest in, and the property value, really it all lined up, and we're thrilled to be partnering with them on that.
Amazing, amazing. I like the fact that, you know, the way you tell it sort of like reminds me of all the real estate process of acquiring a property. You were mentioning this was a former coal facility and you have all the scale, all the technology, all the investment already there. It's easier to turn it into a profitable cannabis business. So I you know, there's so many things that we're not going to get to cover today, but it's super interesting, this whole real estate of home buying, you know, but a much larger scale. And I was wondering, you know, you mentioned, so like the reputation of the lender, you mentioned also the restricted license regulations. You mentioned also a bit about the local market and probably purchasing power and, you know, who's going to demand this and the proximity to other markets. So this is a question. Where are you looking next? What's the next state that fits this pattern? Or if you're or maybe you're cautious, you say, okay, we're not looking at more states, but maybe you want to dig into more one of these places where you are, which would that be?
Yeah, we really have a wide open landscape where we're looking for tenants. even in the unlimited license jurisdictions, we always look at transactions, and that would be in a Michigan or a Colorado or a California. In fact, we own a property in California, and you might be saying, well, wait a minute, you just said limited license. California has many, many licenses. Well, we're focused on a dispensary in San Diego County. And so San Diego is a limited license jurisdiction where there's only 33 licenses to service 3.6 million people. I think I flipped that. I think it's 36 licenses to service 3.3 million people. So we'll look at transactions everywhere because we have those three pillars and you could have compensating factors. And so it could be an unlimited license state with an extremely strong operator with a very high quality property that could potentially be attractive. And so we're obviously looking and emphasizing what we call those turn-on states, the states where you're converting from a medical program to an adult use program. There tends to be a little bit more opportunity there, such as in Connecticut, which recently converted to adult use last year. Obviously, Ohio, with we're looking at some stuff in Ohio. You know, people aren't yet ready to pull the trigger on anything in Florida, but certainly we're keeping an eye on Florida. And then there's other states to pay attention to. There continues to be some growth a little bit in Illinois. And like I said, we'll really go anywhere where the opportunities are. But one other point I want to make, when we talk about real estate and providing real estate capital, you know, people think sale leaseback, maybe they haven't heard of it before. They think this is something special for the cannabis industry. This is actually something that is utilized very broadly throughout our economy. And so if you were Home Depot or Starbucks or Lowe's or Walgreens, you'd find that they largely sale leaseback their properties. And the reason they're not utilizing their precious capital to own the real estate is because real estate has limited upside. And I believe that the investors, when they're giving you the capital to grow your business, whether it be a merchandising business or retailing business or manufacturing business, they're giving you the capital to grow EBITDA and to grow your business, not to have that capital sit tied up in a piece of commercial real estate earning you limited returns.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I wanted to make you a quick follow-up question. That do you prefer to work with retailers, cultivators? It really doesn't make a difference for you. How do you, I mean, which sector you prefer the most?
We like having properties across the value chain. Right now we have about 92% of our capital is in cultivation facilities, the rest in dispensaries. But if you looked at by number, we actually have more dispensaries than cultivation. Oh, we have 17 sense. Dispensaries. When you think about it, right, they're smaller facilities. And so they just cost less versus a cultivation facility, which could be $30, $40 million.
Thank you. Super interesting.
I was wondering if you can quickly, gift for our viewers a story of a great turnover. A real estate facility that you came in and you found out that, it was, this is the perfect place for this operation. And, it was maybe a meat shop or a butchery operation, that kind of properties that had a great value, and it was, like a hidden gem. And then you, ta-da moment.
I am going to disappoint, and I apologize in advance. What we don't do is we don't acquire a property, entitle it for cannabis, and then go find a tenant. All of our transactions already have a tenant in mind. So whenever we close on a property, we have a long-term lease in place at that time. What I can say is, when you look at these transactions, a lot of times the tenant really wants to control that property search. And we have seen people take the cold storage facility as an example, to see a shell that was built, purpose-built, has some mechanicals there, and they can make some modifications. We're providing $12 million to make some retrofitting and to build out some of the interior and for some of the mechanicals. So they see that shell, they think it's a good start, and they want to convert. And then we've had others that say, I would rather start from scratch. And so we've acquired a plot of land and then provided the capital for them to build a facility, 100,000 square foot ground up facility. And so it's been interesting to work with different groups. Some groups like taking older buildings and retrofitting. Some groups don't like doing that, and they like building ground up. And we've seen success in both realms.
Excellent. Paro?
I just wanted to go to jump now to our kind of must ask question for all our invitees nowadays. The rescheduling of cannabis. We know it's a hot topic right now, and I wanted to ask you if you have any appreciations or how do you anticipate this change will impact NewLake Capital and the broader cannabis industry?
Yes. So specifically for NewLake, the impact from Schedule 3 is an immediate credit improvement across our entire portfolio. Upon finalization of that rule and the movement of marijuana to Schedule 3 and the elimination of 280E, we estimate that over $500 million across our tenant base, they will save over $500 million a year in taxes. That's a meaningful improvement to our tenants' cash flow. So an immediate improvement to the credit quality across the portfolio. That's number one. Number two is we do expect that upon the final rule, it will bring in incremental investment into the space. We think it will buoy equity valuations, which we think has the opportunity to start a recapitalization trend. So if you see an increase in valuations, you see the opportunity for operators to issue equity, recapitalize the balance sheet, pay off some debt. You now have an improved balance sheet. You have lower interest expense, better cash flow, lower debt balances. That is an improvement in credit quality yet again. And so we're really excited about this change because we think it does start, we think it's a key catalyst to starting this overall credit improvement, not to mention, I think, a real shot in the arm for the industry to bring in further states that will convert from medical to adult use and really is a key catalyst in continuing the momentum of this industry.
Absolutely. Thank you for that perspective. And final question, do you have any exciting plans or any important information you want to our audience right now listening, or maybe also our audience in the future to tell them about, or again, any upcoming events from NewLake that you want to share?
No, I mean, as a public company, we obviously have to not provide any forward-looking statements. In terms of our participation, we'll be in and around the Nareit conference, which is happening in a week. We're doing a virtual conference through KCSA OTC. We are participating in your conference in New Jersey coming up in a
Exactly.
couple of weeks, and so excited to present there. I invite anybody if they want to learn more about us, newlake.com. There's an investor page there. Please follow us on Twitter. We're pretty active on Twitter. We look forward to having any conversations with anyone if they want to reach out to us. And what's also interesting, what you normally don't see from a publicly traded company is on their investor page a dropdown which lists where you can buy the stock. As an OTC listed company, what I would say to folks, and I say this on every one of our earnings calls, we run the company to qualify with all listing requirements for New York and NASDAQ, except we're focused on the cannabis sector. And so we're poised and ready for that uplisting. I know there's a lot of speculation around when that's going to happen. We certainly see what's happened with Curaleaf and TerrAscend on TSX. So we're paying attention to that. But on our page, we actually have a dropdown where folks can find where they can buy the stock. While we're still, sitting here on OTC, but I think it's a great opportunity for people to get in before there's a move, before institutions are able to come into the name and play it. And in fact, we've had a lot of insider buying, and I personally bought some shares at 1973 a few weeks ago during our open period.
That's excellent. Thank you, Anthony, for that.
Thank you so much, Anthony. It was a great conversation, great insights. I think we provided some actionable points for folks here. Everyone's invited to our New Jersey event, where they will be able to meet you in person and, of course, connect with other investors, find out more strategies. Very, very interesting. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me and giving me the opportunity to talk about NewLake.
It's always a pleasure. Until next time, Anthony.
Bye-bye.
All right. All right. That was a very insightful episode of Cannabis Insider. Now for the books. Thank you, Anthony, for joining us today, for sharing your wealth of information with us about, again, the real estate business in cannabis. Nico, how did you feel today?
Oh, Pato, thank you so much. I had a great time. Thank you to the folks behind the camera. Always great. I think we had a great conversation on how to grow your business, how to escalate it, how to find partners that you can rely on, and so like release businesses from the burden of owning property. So I think this was a great contribution for our readers, our viewers. Do not forget to visit us, meet with us, and meet fantastic people like Anthony at our event upcoming in New Jersey soon, and in Chicago.
That's right.
Right, Pato?
That's right. And you can also find more information at thatzinga.com. And until we see again, stay knowledgeable, stay green. Catch you next time. We'll be right back.